So I'm going to start this retreat by talking some more on some of Dogen's writings. For some reason, I feel are particularly appropriate right now. This is from Gakuryo Jinshu, Important Aspects of Zazen. There are those who believe that the mind that seeks the way is truly enlightened, since there is no dependence upon fame and gain. There are those who say that the mind that seeks the way embraces 3,000 worlds in a moment of thought as its meditation. There are those who say that the mind that seeks the way teaches the non-arising of any delusion. There are those who say that the mind that seeks the way enters straightway into the world of the Buddhas. None of these people yet know the mind that seeks a way and therefore devalue it. They are far from the truth of the Buddhas. When one reflects upon a selfish mind which concerns itself only with fame and gain, it is clear that it has no knowledge of the 3,000 worlds within a thought moment and is also not non-delusional. Such a mind knows nothing other than delusion because of its immersion in fame and gain. It cannot be compared to the mind that seeks a way. Although many of the wise have used worldly methods to reach enlightenment, it is certain that they had no misunderstanding in their own minds concerning fame and gain. They did not even have an attachment to truth and no desire whatsoever for the world as most men know it. The mind that truly seeks a way can be any of those previously mentioned, so long as it also clearly sees through the changeability of the universe, understanding utterly arising and disappearing. This mind is totally different to the mind of ordinary men. It is excellent to practice the meditations of the non-arising mind and the appearance of the 3,000 worlds after you have gained the mind that seeks a way, but do not confuse the two by putting them in the wrong order. So, for mind that seeks a way, we'll just replace that temporarily just with the eternal. With our own Buddha nature, our own Buddha mind. And what he's saying is that any particular insight into the nature of things, if it's an insight that is an insight of someone who's basically still stuck in fame and gain, then it'll just automatically be turned into delusion. So, to start with, we have to ask ourselves, you know, what is really meant by fame and gain? By fame, you can understand the clinging to human love. By gain, you can understand the clinging to material security. In its more inflated, obvious forms, the clinging to human love becomes a lust for fame. But that's not where it starts. That's not where it originates. And similarly, the longing for material security, you know, to be safe and to be secure, if that's carried far enough, goes far enough in a delusional direction, well, it's a lust for fame then, or for gain, I mean. But we shouldn't be, it's too easy to be misled by the terms fame and gain. I think most of us aren't sitting here longing to be famous or longing to be rich. But we all long for human love, and we all long for material security. And that's not something that's wrong. That's programmed into us. It's when we cling to aspects of human love, it's when we cling to aspects of material security that we get in trouble. And by human love, we can mean our love for our families, our longing to be loved by our families, friends, fellow Sangha members. It can include romantic, sexual love. It includes the longing to have a good reputation. So all that comes under the fame category. And none of it in itself is wrong or evil, bad, and nasty. But our job as contemplatives is to take a further step beyond what most people take into reliance upon the eternal, into direct reliance upon the eternal. And to do that, we've got to be willing to let go of the other in the trust that it will be given back on the conditions, or if and when it's needed, it will be given back. In other words, to kind of translate into more accurate terms, in the trust that the eternal will provide everything that is truly needed. This is why Rim Master says, hammer away on, cut all ties, give up everything. How many times have I heard her say, give up everything? And you always think, oh my God, that's impossible. I mean, I always had that little niggling thing in my mind. How can I do that? Well, it's really just saying, let go and drop into the arms of the eternal. Give up everything is a way of saying, trust the eternal completely. On the material gain side of things, I talked about the fame side. On the gain side, you include, a longing for health and longevity, a longing to maintain our independence as long as possible, not to have to depend on others. Like to be wheeled around in a wheelchair or something, no one wants it. No one in their right mind wants that. And if it comes to that, will I just accept it positively or will I not? So that doesn't all sound like, gain in the coarser sense. We all want to have good health. We'd all like to live, if we can live without too much pain, we'd like to live a reasonable lifespan. When people have a lot of pain, either spiritual or physical, it changes that. They start wishing the pain to go away. People can cling to dying just as much as people can cling to living. Well, the clinging's the problem. Doesn't matter what it's to in the end. The clinging is the problem. And again, if we say, don't cling to externals, it means hold fast to the eternal. So that's why he's saying these practices and insights that he lists at the beginning, in themselves, they don't cut it. We've got to do something about ourselves at a basic level. In other words, a genuine conversion is needed. Then all of those things and many more can be made use of. Similarly, when he says, the mind that truly seeks the way can be any one of those previously mentioned, so long as it also clearly sees through the changeability of the universe, understanding utterly arising and disappearing. That reminds me of that lovely little thing I found in the Mahaparinirvana Sutra, of which sutra I'm totally ignorant. Rim Master someone had donated this. It's like it was in three volumes, three big volumes in translation. Rim Master handed me one, and when I turned right to this particular thing, it's the only thing I know from the Mahaparinirvana Sutra. But it says that the person who, that when one truly penetrates the teaching of impermanence, one finds the unchanging. When one truly penetrates the teaching of dukkha, the universality of suffering, one finds true bliss. When one truly penetrates the teaching of no self, one finds the true self. So flip what he said around. I mean, look at it from its, what do you call it, converse or whatever, or its other side. The other side of what he's saying, he's talking about the eternal. To truly penetrate the changeable is to come to know the unchanging. And one can only do that by just truly meditating and letting go into the arms of the eternal. It makes a big difference in whether you take these teachings at the lower common denominators or at the higher level that is really intended. It makes a big difference in how you read this. He says, it is excellent to practice the meditations of the non-arising mind in the appearance of the 3,000 worlds. Previously said, there's, you know, nothing in it, you know, these people know nothing about it. You know, in the next paragraph he's saying, it's excellent to do this, provided you get things in the right order. Provided you're holding fast to the eternal, then all these things are good. And note he says above also, although many of the wise have used worldly methods to reach enlightenment, it is certain that they had no misunderstanding in their minds, in their own minds concerning fame and gain. They did not even have an attachment to truth and no desire whatsoever for the world as most people know it. In actual fact, you know, we can't undergo the process of conversion without the worldly. Because, you know, we're never going to be other than what we are. We've got body and mind. You got body and mind, you're in the world. If you don't have any respect for your physical desires, then you don't meet your physical needs and you don't survive. That's worldly, isn't it? It's not that the world is an evil, bad, nasty place. Is that one? It is not wise to seek one's refuge in that which is changing. One needs to find one's refuge in that which is unchanging. So now I want to make a little leap here. But over the last few years, I've talked a lot about the circulation of the water of the spirit. So, you know, where do we plug fame and gain into the circulation of the water of the spirit? Remember all the diagrams I've done of the circulation, and I've done so in the lower gate, you know, the upper gate, up at the top of the head, and the what's called the heavenly heart. But the third eye, like fame and gain in their coarser expression are down at the lower gate level, basically. So what do fame and gain constitute spiritually? Which is really saying what is the longing for love and the longing for physical and mental well-being? Security and well-being. What is that for the purposes of the circulation of the water of the spirit and the purposes of conversion. Well, that's down at the kind of raw material level. That's what's going to get worked on. And it needs to be worked on because it's got confusion built into it. For all of us, it's got confusion built into it. Not because there's something essentially wrong with it, because there's confusion built into it. So that we get our longing for love externalized. We get our longing for well-being externalized. And then that leads to inevitable disappointment and grief. And when the disappointment and grief are great enough, to resentment, anger. Resentment and anger are great enough to rage. When the pain of all that is great enough, then into the just a hard shell of delusion, where one just hardens one heart to the truth and just, kind of wallows in the mud. That's the negative cycle. The positive cycle is to take each bit and piece of the raw material as it arises and to let the meditation work upon it. With each arising of the delusion, with each arising of the longing, to bring it into the heart and let the meditation cook it. And let the transformative process begin. This is the unending work of the contemplative trainee. And I'm not just saying the monks in this. I'm saying the laymen who aspire to a contemplative practice. This is their work too. Then, within this process, who knows what may arise as being good to do? Generally speaking, it'll be within the context of the precepts, of course. And there will be many aspects that appear worldly, or many activities that have a worldly aspect that will still be good to do, provided one is holding fast to the eternal and to the true spirit of the precepts in the doing. Not just to the letter of the precepts, but to the spirit of the precepts, which is a much deeper matter. In other words, where is one taking one's refuge at this moment? Where is one taking one's refuge at this moment? Where is one taking one's refuge at this moment? Dogen, there's famous stories about Dogen and his concern about fame and gain. Dogen was born into a very powerful family, and even as a little boy, he saw what involvement with worldly power can lead to. He also, when he first came back to Japan from China, he first went to Kyoto, and he realized after a while that this is just not a place where he could teach the truth. There's too much worldly involvement. It reminds me a lot of our masters going first to San Francisco and then leaving San Francisco, then eventually leaving the Bay Area. theory, one can do it anywhere. In practice, it helps to be apart from the world, especially when you want to really do deep training. There's a famous story about Dogen. He was offered a big grant of land by a wealthy lord, and he refused it. And his chaplain went back and accepted it, thinking, I guess, that Dogen was just being polite. And when Dogen found what he'd done, he threw him out of the monastery, and he had the monks take the ton where he sat and tear it up and dig up the earth underneath it and chuck it out. And then the story is he wept. But he was not going to have strings attaching him to worldly power. Context, I come back to the term the mind that seeks the way here. We can now say that the mind that seeks the way is really a way that Dogen is expressing the heart that is holding fast to the eternal. When a loyal servant gives advice, its power is frequently far-reaching. When the Buddhas and ancestors give so much as only a single word, all living things will be converted. Only a wise king will take advice. Only an exceptional trainee will truly hear the words of the Buddha. If the mind cannot change from one side to the other, it cannot undergo conversion. The source of transmigration, the source of rebirth, can never be severed. In other words, we'll never get to the root of the koan and get it the help that it needs. So it has to, the rebirth process has to continue. The rebirth process is fueled by a need. And until that need is met, the rebirth process has to continue. Unless the loyal servant's advice is taken, the government of a country will show no virtue and wisdom in its policy. You know, clearly he's using an analogy here, an analogy between really listening to the teaching and taking the teaching to heart and putting it into practice, and a wise advisor giving advice. You know, rulers of a country listening to wise advisors. I remember that when I was starting to sniff around in Buddhism, which only went on for a few months before I actually found one of our master's disciples and realized I'd really found what I was looking for. But when I was sniffing around Buddhism, I read a number of things. And with each one I wondered, each thing that I read, I wondered, could the person who wrote this, could I be this, you know, study with this person? And for each one, there was just a no, an inner no. until I actually saw one of our monks. And it was just the sight of one of our monks before I'd ever heard anything. The sight triggered that thing down in Nahara. I mean, I felt it trigger something down in Nahara. I felt something. I don't know what. I don't know how to describe it. There's no way I can describe it. Something just went, yes, this is it. Just the sight of one of our monks. And yet I read whole books by other people and I was really impressed by what they said. Not many books, just a few, really. It wasn't the same. It's not about how clever people are and not even about how virtuous they are and how well they can teach and train. It's not about any external thing. When you find the teaching and the practice that are right for you, you find the teacher that's right for you, you need to just forget everything else and go with that. And be content with that. And don't bring in your own opinions. Don't sully it with your own opinions, with your past experience. Just be open to it. Take it in and put it into practice. And just putting one little bit of it into practice is the important thing. Finding any little bit of the teaching to put into practice is the important thing. Even the least tiniest bit. You know, I'm saying this to people who've been training for decades in this room. Why would I be talking about it at such a beginning level? Because it's not a beginning level I'm talking at. Well, it is, actually, and it's not. Because we're all just beginning all the time. This is why people will do this for decades and then quit. Why would they do that? They didn't realize that you're beginning all the time. And you have to keep beginning again. You never know when the great opportunity is going to be the one that you took. You got to take a million little opportunities before you can take the great opportunity. And the great opportunity won't look any different than all the others at the time that you take it. It'll just be clear in retrospect what the meaning of your action was, of your choice. And interesting enough, he goes on to say, just what I said just now. Most people think that one must study in order to gain wealth, but the Buddha teaches that training itself embraces enlightenment. As yet, I have heard of no one who became wealthy without much study, nor of anyone who became enlightened without undergoing training. There are, of course, differences in training method, differences between faith and understanding, between sudden and gradual, but enlightenment can only be realized as a result of training. Some means of study are shallow, others deep. Some are interesting and others boring, but treasure is derived from much study. He's just hammering away on it. Grab it at any point you are. If you're bored, grab it in the boredom. If you're interested, grab it in the interest. It doesn't matter. Meditate, put it into practice. Take that one place where you've never felt you could do it and do it there. It says, none of these things depend upon the ability of rulers or just plain luck. None of them require special ability. None of them are just a matter of luck. He says, although you may be training in the world of delusion, it is still the world of enlightenment. The Buddhas do not force you. Everything comes out of your own efforts in the way. When you are trained, you are beckoning to enlightenment. Your own treasure is within you, not outside. Training and enlightenment are their own reward. Enlightened action leaves no sign by which it can be traced. To look upon one's training with enlightened eyes is to see no speck of dust. This is why it is absolutely futile to complain about the conditions of our training. You know, don't waste time with complaining or comparing. It gets you nowhere. There's never going to be better conditions than there are today. There's never going to be a better time than there is today. You're never going to be in a better state for realizing the truth and for training than you are today. You know, don't worry about the past. Don't fear the future. Just do what you need to do today. Just do the training today. A whole lifetime of seeming failure can be revealed in one moment to be a lifetime of building merit. Similarly, a whole lifetime of seeming string of successes can be revealed in one moment to be utterly empty. Don't worry about external appearances. Just turn within and do the training. Put the meditation into practice. Now, this week especially is a week to focus on meditation. And everything we do is to keep the focus on meditating. To let go of dis-ease and discontent. Just be still with the eternal. It is enough to know the Lord of the house.